Noel. We're recording a new episode of This Mobile Life. I'm with regular friend and co-host and guest, dialing in from Seattle, Francis McCarthy. How are you doing?
Yeah, doing great, man. How are you?
Yeah, awesome. We were just chatting earlier. You're telling me it's your first Father's Day. Congrats.
Yeah, thanks so much, man. It's it's meant a lot more this year just with little Dominique coming on board 8 months ago. So it's been really fun. Got kind of spoiled over the weekend, so had like this amazing massage treatment at this place in downtown Seattle yesterday, and then today we went to a really awesome dim sum place here in Capitol Hill. So it's been a really pretty luxurious weekend, actually.
Yeah, so I was actually surprised and caught off guard it was Father's Day. I'm like, oh, I think it's, isn't it in like September or something in Australia? It's a definitely different time.
Yeah, it's a different day. Yeah, I can't.
We should Google it. We should know.
September 3rd.
Okay. So I haven't forgot Dad. I actually messaged him on WhatsApp and I said, hey, happy Father's Day in the US. And then to riff on that a bit, I was walking around today in North Beach. I had lunch there in San Francisco and I saw this sign. Let me pull it up. I shared it on Facebook. We were having a bit of chuckle about that. It reads, I'll put it in the show notes. It's from this, I think it's a bar. It's called Jack's. It says, hey, Cavs, who's your daddy now? ? Happy Father's Day, Warriors. Best Father's Day gift ever.
Oh, man. So a little public trolling there.
A bit of niggling. Because, so obviously the big thing that's happened is that the Cavs lost in the finals against the Warriors. And now the new NBA champions, it's gone back to Golden State.
Yeah, it seemed like that this result was kind of perhaps sealed or partially sealed when Kevin Durant signed with the Warriors this time last year, when he got that SOS call from Draymond apparently after game 7. So I think, it's become just so apparent that they have so much more talent than even the second best team, let's say, in Cleveland. And it's really like I've been talking to my fantasy banter group about it, and it's just really an arms race now to see who can load up and perhaps like secure some trades or secure some free agents. So there's some talk today on Twitter about the Cavs looking at Paul George and potentially involved in a multiplayer deal with probably Kevin Love and some other players. Mm-hmm. So it seems like definitely the Cavs are getting in the mix to see if they can load up again, to just see if they can take the Warriors down, because, you know, all those guys are in their primes and they're not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, it was interesting because at the start of the season, maybe it was midway, like LeBron kind of sounded the alarm bell. He's saying, hey, I need more help. Get me more help. And then people were like, pretty critical, saying, hey, you know, you already have the highest payroll in the league. Why do you need more help? And then I remember Charles Barkley, he was on both sides of the fence. I can't remember what his opinion was, but he actually said, you know, it's really hard to defend a title. Like, we have to get better because, like, the Warriors just signed Kevin Durant and we haven't gotten any better.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, if you look at, the Warriors add Durant to last year's team and the Cavs added Kyle Korver and Deron Williams, you know, so just guys in completely different categories of player. You know, you got one who's an MVP caliber guy right now, and then you've got Deron Williams who's washed. And then you've got Kyle Korver, who's a great shooter, but very one-dimensional and isn't all that good on defense. So it wasn't really a fair fight when it came to who those two teams brought in.
Yeah, and then I think they also had another guy. Who was it? Was it Derek Williams or like the power forward?
Yeah, they brought him in and he didn't get much burn. I really thought he would be worth just giving a flyer to earlier in the series, just because he's a bit of a wild card, you know. Mm. Like, I think he's a number 2, number 3 overall pick in his draft class, so he came in to the league really hyped and then kind of didn't really turn out exactly as what people were hoping for with that higher draft pick. But, you know, a guy who can at least put some points up and has some athleticism, you know, could maybe just like add like a little bit of an X factor to the series, because, you know, the Cavs other guys like Channing Frye, Deron Williams, Kyle Korver couldn't really make their way to make an impact in a series. So I thought they kind of had Derek Williams just sitting there, who at least would have been worth, you know, 5 minutes here or there early in the series just to see what he could do.
Yeah, I don't think they played him at all. I always just saw him in warm-up gear. And I feel like he could have brought some energy, like, you know, get some dunks, some putbacks, you know, blocks, rebounds, etc. Kind of like an energy guy. Kind of a little bit like Tristan Thompson, but with a bit more offense.
Yeah, I think, you know, anything they could have done to just get a little bit more athleticism on the floor, a rebounding threat, someone who, yeah, is a lob threat, you know, can get a couple of easy dunks. Yeah, just to kind of match them with athleticism, you know, I thought would have been good. Yeah. But yeah, I think we're definitely going to see some retooling from the Cavs this offseason. You know, LeBron is always conscious of his legacy and what it would mean if he, you know, got to the same place, say, next year and falls at the final hurdle again. So I think, you know, he'll do everything in his power to work with the front office and, you know, hit up his guys around the league. You know, he's probably, you know, I'd be very surprised if he doesn't have personal contact with guys like Paul George and anyone else who's in the mix to see if he can convince them to come over.
Yeah, if LeBron makes a phone call, people are going to pick it up.
<That's simple. laughs> Yeah.
It's like, I'm LeBron James.
Yeah, there aren't too many missed calls going around from LeBron.
Yeah, so what did you think of the actual game itself? It was pretty intense, like throughout the whole game. It's only, like, I think, in the last few minutes, like you could, even maybe it was in the last minute, like the Warriors had pulled away and had definitely won.
It seemed like it was kind of weird because the Cavs were still kind of theoretically, mathematically within striking distance with like 2.5 minutes to play. They hit, I think, a three, which cut it to, I think it was like around 9 points. And so, like, you know, the Warriors' probability of winning would have been around like 98-99% at that time. But still, like, within, you know, three kind of Reggie Miller style crazy threes to see if they could, you know, foul and extend the game and see if they could make the Warriors close it out at the free throw line. But it just seemed like, you know, Warriors at home with that kind of a lead late, they kind of just packed it in and in the last 2 minutes or so and just, you know, stopped fouling and that just, you know, was effectively the white flag. So, but it was awesome to see how long the Cavs could go with them. And it was just crazy to see LeBron down the stretch there. He just kept barreling towards the basket and just, you know, bullied his way to the hoop for layups. And then obviously the Warriors were kind of protecting against the three and seemingly just kind of allowing that a little bit. But, you know, it's like when LeBron gets in that mode, there's not much that can stop him getting to the basket and getting a dunk or an easy layup. So it kind of, it's just crazy to see how unstoppable he is when he really puts his head down. But I think, you know, apart from JR hitting a bunch of threes, you know, it was just hard to have those guys like Kyrie and Kevin Love didn't sort of come to the party in that crazy fashion that they had to, you know, to win game four. And so, you know, Love, I think, was 0-3 from the three-point line. So if he's not hitting threes, you know, they're going to fall behind really quick. And KD obviously had it going and wasn't going to let the Cavs get too close there. So, yeah, in the end, man, just overwhelming talent.
Yeah, I actually thought that LeBron was almost like too late. Like, I think after he scored 30 points, which is still phenomenal, between then and 40 points, that's when he just started barreling towards the ring. And I feel like he could have done more. Like, I feel like sometimes he just passes up the shot. Like, whereas Kevin Durant is just a killer. Like, he will just go out and score. Like, doesn't matter if there's two guys on him, he'll still go for the shot.
Yeah, and he's also been going for his shot on Twitter tonight as well. He's been getting a bunch of trolls in his mentions, and he's been going back. Like, if you look at Kevin Durant's mentions on Twitter, It's pretty crazy. So his replies. So he's literally, like, replying to trolls who are, like, giving him a bunch of stick about the finals, about Draymond, about all sorts of topics. And he's going back at them, which is kind of pretty insane because he's like, you know, imagine LeBron doing that or Steph Curry doing that. Like, these are like the best players in the game. And like, I'm certain that these guys get hundreds of trolls every week, like, hit, you know, trying to get their attention on Twitter. But KD is like firing back with both barrels. And I would have thought he'd be like, you know, sipping cocktails in Cancun or something at this point, but apparently he's trying to get his shots off against these Twitter trolls.
Well, he probably is sipping cocktails in Cancun while on Twitter.
Yeah, I guess they don't, you know, wherever he's staying probably doesn't lack for, you know, Wi-Fi access.
So. Yeah. So just to cover that off, so now that the Warriors, what was interesting? Where did you watch the game?
Man, so I watched at home. It was the first game I watched at home rather than out at one of the sports bars here. Basically, I was on dummy duty. So watched the game. I would have watched it with her if she was a little bit older, but she was in bed by that time. So I was kind of hanging around and making sure she was okay, and then making sure I caught the game as well. So, but yeah, she rewarded me on Father's Day by saying, dad, 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 dad. So
that's good. That's awesome. Where did I watch it? I watched it at a bar called Lucky Strike in San Francisco. And so I got there pretty early, like half an hour beforehand, and we were able to get a seat. Yeah. And then I had some friends that arrived a bit later, and that bar just got packed out at 6. I think the game started about maybe just a little bit after 6. And it was really like intense being there because everyone's watching on these, it's like multiple screens, like a massive projector screen. And then on each side of the bar, it was like a two-sided screen, like one facing towards people at the bar and one facing towards the bar as well. And so obviously like the Warriors were like winning towards the end and the place just got more rowdy and louder. And so after they won, or counting the last 10 seconds, when the game actually finished, what people did, you'd think people would be cheering and clapping and hollering and stuff. You know what they did? They all pulled out their phones and they're taking videos and Snapchat videos and taking photos, stuff like that. So I'm like, no one's actually cheering. Everyone's just taking photos and videos of everyone else.
Yeah, it's a crazy phenomenon, man. I think, you know, you see that now at concerts and stuff like that too. It's almost like it's more about showing other people that you were there than actually being there.
Yeah, it's like I was there in the moment. So what was funny, like this week I was at a conference. It was called Mind the Product. So it's kind of targeted towards product managers. And I was sitting up really high in the audience. It was in this music kind of concert theater. And I remember the speaker pulled up a new slide and must have said something interesting or you know, tweet-worthy or something. And then you see everyone just pull out their phones, have their landscape mode and take photos of this slide and maybe they tweeted or something. But it was like almost in unison and I was actually about to pull out my phone as well. So it was pretty funny.
Well, it's an interesting thing, the kind of live tweeting at conferences, right? Because like each conference has their hashtag and, you know, they encourage people to interact and try and spread the word about the conference and like, the you know, demonstrate to people that they're there. You know, I think that's where, you know, if you're running a conference, it's important to have like a really talented, on top of it, social media manager, like on the ground running things. Because if you know that a speaker is going to come up with these particular points or topics, then you can, you know, create quote graphics and stuff like that in advance. And then, you know, perhaps like post those in real time and you can just get people who are following the, you know, event account or the company account who's running the event to just retweet that, you know, rather than, you know, I think that's an option. It's obviously always good to get people tweeting it themselves on their own account, but I find that there's so many times that it's just such a grainy, crappy image of a slide.
Yes, that's what everyone's taking photos of, slides.
Yeah, and it's just like, I think there's got to be like, you know, smarter ways to go about generating quotes from conferences and posting it to Twitter. So I think, you know, that might be a topic for another time, but it's kind of like a pet peeve of mine is like these grainy images of quotes, you know, coming up and they just don't look that good.
Well, I definitely took a few and posted them on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
But let's circle back to the NBA draft quickly before we talk about like tech. So what's been interesting is the fallout from the NBA finals. Everyone obviously realizing the Warriors are like super strong. Everyone needs to retool. And also because the NBA draft is coming up, I think, very soon, right?
It's, it's Thursday our time. So it's the 22nd of June.
Okay. And then there's been all these rumors, particularly around the number one pick. And with Boston, who holds the number one pick, and with Philly, who holds the number three pick as well.
Yeah. So the deal that's been agreed to, which will be announced tomorrow, I think, is that Boston had the number one pick. They've traded the number one pick to Philly. So, and Philly will select Markel Fultz from University of Washington. So shout out Seattle on that one. And so he'll be a Sixer. So he'll join Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. So that's a really exciting trio.
Trust the process.
Oh, dude, trust the process. Right? I've started saying process as well because everyone's process here. So it's trust the process. And I tend to talk to a lot of people about the process, you know, because, you know, I'm wearing these jerseys and people are asking about the NBA. So I'm constantly talking about the Sixers. So I'm super excited that Markel is going there. I think they're just going to be an awesome combination, those three guys. And Danny Ainge, you know, on the Celtics side of things, it's become almost like a bit of a running joke that he just wants to keep accumulating these assets and keep piling them up and kick the can down the road into the future. So I saw this thing and it was like, you know, on Father's Day, it says, you know, you get a mug and it says number one dad. And it says that it said today, Danny Ainge got this mug, number one dad, and he traded it for two mugs, which were like number three dad and number four dad in the future. So I think his fan base are probably getting a little bit impatient, but he's in a tough spot because he's got a point guard in Isaiah Thomas who was basically an all-star caliber guy, getting up towards about 29 points a game. So I think, he's due for a contract extension, which looks like being, a max deal around $200 million. Meanwhile, they got the number one pick, and that consensus number one pick is Markelle Fultz, who is also a point guard. So I think they felt that they didn't want to, confuse the situation by having two sort of starting caliber point guards fighting for that position. And he also, he turned one pick into two picks. So they get the number three pick this year from Philly. And then they either get next year's Lakers pick, or if that doesn't convey, then they get the 2019 Sacramento pick. So he's effectively got, let's call it, for argument's sake, two top five picks instead of a number one pick.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be interesting to see what he does with that. But, the follow-up speculation was that he was going to take a package of these picks that is his accumulated and trade them plus maybe existing veterans to get a guy like Jimmy Butler. And then, the grand plan is apparently to also sign Gordon Hayward and then eventually apparently also go after Anthony Davis, right? So if all of that happens, then he is, the absolute puppet master of the NBA and he's pulled all the right strings. But, I got to say, man, it took a lot of guts to trade the number one pick. So props to Danny Ainge for going through with the trade. I hope it works out for both teams. If he makes two good selections, then, hopefully it'll be a good trade for both teams. But I think, I've been listening to all the Sixers podcasts today that have, this kind of thing warrants an emergency podcast. So there were three different Sixers podcasts that came out today. And all these Sixers fans are over the moon. They basically figure that, the Sixers through this process era, 4 years, have accumulated so many picks, first and second rounders, that they've just got, it didn't really hurt them much to give up two first rounders to get the number one pick. So they were like, awesome, we move from number three to one, we get the consensus best player in the draft. He fits in as he can plug in as the starting point guard straight away. He's also got Ben Simmons, who is capable of running point as well at 6'8". And then they got Embiid, who's 7'2", 7'3", who is kind of looks like he has the potential to be an Olajuwon level, post guy with shooting, just an insane center. So, man, the Philly fans are really excited about this.
Yeah, I think the future is bright for Philadelphia. The only thing is all three are unproven, right? In terms of Markelle Fultz hasn't played a single NBA game. Ben Simmons played a couple, one preseason game and then broke his foot or something. And then we saw some flashes of brilliance from Embiid for maybe 27, 30 games or something as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see if all three can get on the court and just play together. I mean, that is probably a win in itself.
Yeah, well, they're selling hope at this point, right? It's like the Obama campaign.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting news. He's obviously I feel like he's the ultimate GM, fantasy GM, trading all these picks and positions as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. Playing NBA fantasy, this is the stuff that makes it super exciting. And to have two real world GMs trading a whole bunch of picks and all these protections and basically changing the course of their franchise on, in the space of 20 minutes. It's pretty awesome to watch, and that's where NBA Twitter is so awesome, because you'll get a notification, someone's tagged you on Twitter, and then you log on and you're like, whoa, it's blowing up right now. So mm-hmm. that's part of what makes, NBA fandom so cool, is you've got this NBA Twitter element to it, which, you can see people's live reactions to what's going on in real time. And, we're going to see that again on Thursday. 4 p.m. Pacific is when the draft starts, right? And so that'll be when the number one pick is announced, and then number two, and so on from there. But you'll be able to follow, Adrian Wojnarowski on Twitter, and he's going to have those picks probably about 30 to 60 seconds before they're announced live, right? So that's another awesome element of NBA Twitter that just makes it so cool to follow along.
He definitely has all the breaking news before anyone else. I don't know how he does it. He must have all these inside sources where he gets stuff from.
He's amazing. And, we'll probably have something else to talk about post-NBA draft, because there's a lot of speculation that with all the ESPN layoffs that happened, that ESPN are actually planning on bringing in Adrian Wojnarowski and his vertical team over from Yahoo to ESPN, like people think that it's almost a lock that this will happen, which would be a big development for the NBA media landscape.
Yeah, there's been a lot of changes with Yahoo recently as well, or now Oath.
Oath, yeah. Like, I mean, as Aussies, like, what a name, right?
I thought that was a joke when you told me, and I was reading somewhere else. No, it's true. Like, I actually thought it was like an Onion-style article.
Yeah. I struggled to believe it at the start as well. But, yeah, I mean, that's one tech company that doesn't seem to be tracking along too well right now. And, yeah, I'm not a massive fan of this, the rebrand to Oath. I think people are pretty confused by it.
Yeah, interesting. I actually see the Yahoo buses every day when I get off at the Caltrain. There's like these big purple buses. So I'm just reminded of Yahoo, but I only ever use them for like Yahoo Fantasy. I don't use any of the other products, just that. And that's the only one I've used for like the last 5 or 6 years. And the only reason I keep my Yahoo Mail is because I can log into Fantasy Basketball. That's it.
Yeah, I think that use case that you have is a very common one. You know, like people are just keeping this Yahoo Mail just purely for fantasy and they don't really have other use for it. So, yeah, man, I think that's probably kind of a dying brand.
Yeah, but I must say their mobile app is really good because I discovered that you can actually chat in the Yahoo mobile app and trades happen much faster and there's more banter in the mobile app because you get like real-time updates. You get push notifications, that's why.
Cool. So this is for Yahoo Fantasy.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, because the ESPN Fantasy app, which I use for my league, is pretty good, but it's actually really basic. Like they just do minimal updates, like kind of just cosmetic changes. It just looks like something that was designed like 7 years ago, you know? So yeah, I think you know ESPN could definitely do well by upgrading that. And probably upgrading their entire fantasy content, actually, because, you know, as you know, if you play fantasy basketball, it's completely addicting and it's going to make sure that you're hitting that website, ESPN.com fantasy or whatever it is, to check your team, to check the news, all of that. So I think it's, you know, just such a strong investment in content if they were able to, you know, and they've got the money, like they could just bring in 5 or 6 of the best fantasy writers from the fantasy world and just drop them straight in. You know, so I'm surprised it hasn't happened already because, you know, they just got such deep pockets and they cover the NBA pretty well on the whole. But I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen.
It's not as if the Yahoo design has changed at all. Like it still looks the same as from like the early 2000s, the fantasy thing, but it's just very useful. It's functional and it works. And I think the killer thing that they've added is chat. And I'm going to riff on this a little bit in that a friend and I actually were thinking of, we wanted to do this hackathon project where we added HipChat, which is Atlassian's messaging tool. We wanted to create like something for fantasy sports, and we may do that in the future. But so I'm going to segue into my next topic, which I've just decided to talk about. So last week, Atlassian had its hackathon. So it's something that we do once a quarter, and we call it Ship It. The history is it used to be called FedEx, FedEx Days. And then FedEx just said stop using it because it became very famous. But essentially what you do is that for 24 hours, you get to work on a project with some other people in your company. So you can also do it on your own as well. And so it's kind of like if you've ever been to like a startup weekend or just some other type of hackathon, it's a very similar concept in that people pitch their ideas. And usually it's in the week following up and they try to recruit people for their team. You can also just sign up the teams online. I love it because I get to work on stuff that's like completely different to what I do day to day and to work with people I don't normally work with as well.
Yeah, cool. So what were you working on this year?
I can't go too much into it, but it's definitely, so the funny thing is most of my projects are mobile related. It's because like I have skills in the area and I'm interested in those projects, or there might be like a web and mobile component. So I can't really go too much into it because it's something that we want to do. So the thing is most projects, only a small percentage of them, I believe, actually get shipped to production. That means they go out to customers. It's generally like an internal hackathon. Like it's more about exercising your creativity, but also coming up with new ideas. And some of them get shipped. So I can talk about the one that I worked on last time.
Yeah.
So last time we noticed a lot of customers were talking about they wanted an iPad app. So we have an iPhone app and they wanted an iPad. And so we decided to work on an iPad app for Confluence, the tool that I was a product manager for. And then it happened that there was another team for Jira also building an iPad app for Jira. So we decided to combine forces. And one of the reasons we just thought it'd be making a great demo and use case if we had iPad apps for both products. And so what happens is that you work on the actual product and then you have to pitch it like when you finish. And so there's different rounds of pitching. So there's like round one where it's like, it could be like 10 to 12 ideas being pitched. And then the top three move to the next round. So we came first in the round one. And then we came first in round two. And I made it all the way to the finals. So there's finals for each office. So I made it to the finals of Sydney and we ended up coming fifth. But the awesome thing was we kept working on it. So we thought it was a great concept and idea. And we shipped it to customers just before the next ship it. So ship it, as I mentioned, it's every quarter. So every 3 months. So we're able to ship it to customers within 3 months. And that to me is an even bigger win.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, we actually use Jira and Confluence at Unicorn. So it's cool to hear about, you know, the behind the scenes of how you guys are, you know, putting together apps for different platforms.
Yeah, get the iPad app.
I'll have to buy an iPad first, but I'll tell my friends.
Yeah, yeah. So there's also iPhone and Android apps as well. And so this time around, now I'm trying to just find new projects and also work with people that I don't normally work with as well. And that's been awesome. So the previous one, I got recruited for it because I needed a mobile app. Like, oh, we need Matt and we need a bunch of mobile developers. And yeah, we did pretty well as well. But it was awesome because I worked with like five or six people that I had never worked with. So that was really cool.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think, you know, that's a cool thing. You know, when you're in a larger organization, getting to move around and try new projects that are different to your day to day and like get inspiration from other people and be able to exercise some creative kind of muscle like that.
And so I'm going to chat about the next topic. Actually, we actually have a list of topics. So I'm going to skip one. Something I want to talk to you about as well as like just about my weekend. So you had Father's Day. My dad's overseas. So I, you know, wish him a happy Father's Day as well. The other thing was I caught up with some friends that are in town. So I had a friend from Zendesk from their Asia office was in town. And then I caught up with her other friends that also work at Zendesk in San Francisco. So that was really cool, like just networking with them. It's just a normal social thing, right? Just having lunch. And then I think earlier that day I had brunch with a friend from back home. Her husband has just joined Twitter. And then they brought another friend from work who's also from Twitter. And it's just this awesome networking that happens just because you're in Silicon Valley, right? Because Everyone works in tech.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome, man. And you're right in the epicenter, right, of all of that networking. And everyone works somewhere cool, interesting, and can introduce you to someone who works at, you know, another one of these, like, amazing companies, right? So it's that must just be, like, such a cool part of your experience there right now.
Yeah, just you're in like ground zero, right? And like even when I walk around, I live in like Petrero Hill, we walk around like SoMa as well. You see all these offices of like companies that like just underpin the internet. And like I was playing basketball earlier at a gym I just signed up for, and a guy was wearing a Pinterest t-shirt. I'm like, you would never see that back home.
Yeah, it's so cool, man. It's so cool. I remember actually I went to Silicon Valley or San Francisco, yeah, San Francisco. And you mentioned SoMa. So I was actually staying in SoMa last year about this time. And I actually saw the Atlassian offices there. And I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. Atlassian have got a presence here. But yeah, I guess like, you know, we've got a bit of a network to some degree in Seattle as well. But instead of meeting people from Pinterest and Twitter and Zendesk, like we're meeting people from Amazon and Microsoft and those sorts of places. So, but we did meet one couple today, and they the husband, he worked at Amazon. I'm not sure exactly what he does, but he's some kind of an engineer, I think. And they were telling us about some friends of theirs that they sort of came across who were basically working at different large companies like that, and then they started their own startup. Who were both Harvard MBAs, so super super smart people, and they ended up starting this company called Anomaly, which is like wedding dresses, but you know how you can get these things like custom made and it costs like $3,000 to $5,000. These guys do it online and you can basically upload your Pinterest board of dresses and then they'll have designers come up with custom designs for you and you just go back and forth and you can get it for as low as $800. So they're kind of like really disruptive in that market. So it's, and I was just like, wow, that's cool. Well, if I was, I wish I had known about that before we got married, would have saved money.
Yep.
But you know, yeah, it's funny, like the things you hear about and the companies that you hear about just through meeting people who know people who are doing interesting things.
Yeah. I mean, As well, like after we had dinner last night, a friend of a friend invited me to his opening office party. It was kind of weird because I was like, why are they having a party on Saturday night? But I think they just moved in that day. It was called Cover. So it's a mobile app to buy, I believe it's like insurance, like health insurance, travel insurance, like car insurance, that kind of thing. And they're also celebrating the fact that they just raised the Series A. I think they may have been in Y Combinator or something. I can't remember. But I was just at the party just meeting people. And this first guy I met is like, yeah, like we're in Y Combinator at the moment. This other person I met, she's like, oh, I'm a product manager at a VR startup. And it's just like crazy the type of people that you meet, you know?
Yeah, it's awesome, man. And I think, you know, so how do you decide like which events you go to? Because, you know, I've subscribed to that G'day SF newsletter just because my cousins put me onto it and I thought it was kind of cool and I just wanted to see what they were doing with it. But like there are so many events there every week in San Francisco. So like how do you decide which ones you actually go to?
Yeah, so shout out to Christian Thurston who writes that newsletter. He's a friend of mine from Gigster. I've actually been featured that newsletter a few times because I ask really stupid questions. like, how do I get my social security number? Or should I buy the Costco membership? And because like he links stuff from the Facebook group. There's a Facebook group called Aussies in San Francisco or Aussies in the Bay Area. So they link to the thread. In terms of events, I'm a bit limited what I can go to during the week because I have to commute like almost like an hour each way. So I might get home at like, say, anywhere between 6:30 to 7:30. And so if an event starts at 6, I can't really make it unless I go leave work earlier. So I don't tend to go to that many events after work. I normally just catch up with friends. And if I catch up with friends, it has to be late in the day. It might be like, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock. So most of the events I go to are on the weekend. So they're not normally like tech events. They're more like social events. There's so many like festivals and food stalls and all this stuff is going on in San Francisco. Sometimes there's tech-related ones, which I may attend. Yeah, to be honest, I haven't been to that many, only because of like logistics.
Yeah, cool. Well, you know, I guess it's. I mean, it's awesome to have the option, right? And I guess you probably. I mean, for me, I just tend to gravitate to events which get recommended by friends. Like, so yeah, you tend to more hear about them in social scenarios, and they say, oh, hey, by the way, I'm going to this, and you go, oh yeah, that sounds kind of cool. And then yeah, I guess like that word of mouth is, you know, it's hard to beat.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely is a huge factor. I definitely like a lot of events, and I say I'm interested in events on Facebook. That'd be great for like, event discovery. But the event that I went to recently, actually last week, was Mind the Product. It was a conference. And so yeah. I had seen that before the last couple of years. It's kind of towards product people, I think predominantly product managers. So I just spoke to my boss, and I said, hey, I'd love to go to this event. And it's like, yes. Go. Because it's a way for me to A, level up my knowledge about product management, but also network with other product managers as well. It was like a one day thing. And then afterwards, they had like an after party. So I went to that. And do you know what I was doing at the after party?
Nah. What is it?
I was meeting a lot of product managers and trying to recruit them to do my podcast.
That's awesome.
And a lot of them were like, yes. So I'm trying to remember who I met. I met a lot of people who are product managers at like Google, Capital One, which is like a bank. In mm-hmm. US and Canada, met a whole range of other folks. Oh, I actually met the co-founder of Prodpad. So that was really cool. Like some of the speakers. So you may see some guests from Mind the Product conference in the future.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, like that's such a good opportunity. Like I would absolutely be in on that, man. So just hit them up and get them on the pod.
Yeah. And just to circle back to another topic, our last thing, the breaking news this week has been that Amazon has acquired Whole Foods. That to me was like crazy.
Yeah. And I think it was probably due in no small part to us discussing Amazon on the last episode of This Mobile Life.
Exactly. We're like the Adrian Wodge of tech.
Yeah. You can just like whatever we're talking about, you know, you should probably just buy stocks in it as soon as you download and listen to the pod. Not that this is investment advice. You should consult your financial advisor. But yeah, like, you know, it's crazy. But I guess, you know, with these big companies, you know, if there's something there that's interesting enough for us to be chatting about, then typically they've got enough going on to create some news. But this was definitely a big one. Like this kind of hit mainstream media as well. Like, you know, there were a lot of people around the place talking about the acquisition of Whole Foods by Amazon. So, yeah, it's pretty awesome, man. Like, you know, it just goes to show that this Amazon phenomenon is just going to keep going. Like, you know, to add, I think it's something like 221 retail stores, and also like with a customer base that's quite affluent, you know, high disposable incomes, you can imagine like the cross promotion they can do by either placing physical Amazon products like the Echo into retail stores like Whole Foods stores, or, you know, combining their logistics capabilities to deliver Whole Foods products around the US. Like there's just so many synergies there. So yeah, it's amazing. And Amazon stocks went up, you know, a few percentage points, which is, you know, a lot of money. So I think, you know, it was another great story for Amazon.
Yeah, I've got the Google app, and I got a push notification pretty much at the time I published the podcast saying, oh, the stock price has gone up by like $2. And I was like, oh, it must be due to the Whole Foods acquisition. And so it's interesting that Amazon's kind of come back to retail, because they never really had a retail store before. I mean, they never have. They've been experimenting with Amazon Go, which we mentioned in the last podcast. But yeah, it's a obviously a very interesting move. It's a very expensive move as well, because I think it costs something like $13 billion to buy Whole Foods.
Yeah. And there were some tweets going around, which were kind of funny. It was saying that the total increase in the market cap was roughly the same amount based on the increase in stock price. Like basically Amazon stocks on the whole are worth $13 billion more.
Mm-hmm.
So they said essentially the Whole Foods acquisition was free on paper. you know, it doesn't exactly work like that, but you know, I think it's just, you know, one of those integrations, right, where they can create a lot of synergies and efficiencies between the distribution network that Whole Foods has to get all of their products out and all of Amazon's own capabilities in those areas. And as you say, like, they've been experimenting with all sorts of delivery services. In Seattle, you can get Amazon Fresh, where basically they deliver groceries to your house, like even, you know, perishable items as well. So you would think that, you know, all the learnings they've been doing on, you know, kind of these short runs, you know, delivering to individual residential households, they could put all of that technology into place for Whole Foods eventually. And that would just open them up to like a huge customer base all around the country. And yeah, again, like, you know, start introducing them to Amazon products. I'm sure there will be some kind of discount or throw in for Prime members. So, you know, you get even more value out of your Prime membership based on some cool specials they can do with Whole Foods. You know, it's kind of going to be one of those things that kind of feeds upon itself, I think. And yeah, man, the Amazon story chucks on.
Yeah, I was just going to raise a couple of interesting points here. First one is just to give, actually, we should have given this earlier, some context about Whole Foods. So Whole Foods is like a big grocery chain in the US. They stock a lot of, yeah, really good food. They have like a deli. You can buy like food takeaway. What else about them? It's like a lot of organic food as well, like fresh food. And it's like a little bit more expensive than other supermarkets. I mean, do you get Whole Foods? Is there much of a presence in Seattle?
Yeah, there's a Whole Foods, pretty much in the downtown area. There's a few around the place, actually. But yeah, I guess like they're sort of known for being like a upmarket, very hipster, organic kind of place. So, but they have really good stuff, and they kind of have a good reputation for customer service. So they'll have people in store doing, you know, all sorts of tastings with like, you know, really amazing food. So yeah, you can get like amazing stuff there. So I guess their reputations for like, you know, fresh food, high quality, great service, kind of upper, like high end and sort of this organic, natural kind of angle.
Yeah, the second thing I was going to mention was Whole Foods has a relationship with Instacart where you can order stuff and it comes like within a couple of hours. I think I've tried it out before, but wasn't able to order for some reason. But what's interesting is obviously Amazon does the same thing as well. So they can do Prime and same day delivery and also Amazon Fresh. So it'll be interesting to see whether they continue that relationship with Instacart.
Yeah, that will be interesting. Yeah, I guess I read something about that. I couldn't remember what in the end they were saying, but I think it was something to do with the term of the agreement. Like, let's say they had, you know, a number of years left on the agreement, and whether they were going to just let it play out before bringing Amazon's delivery into play. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they manage that.
Yeah, I assume it's a multi-year agreement. So I remember initially they were doing those deliveries, I think informally, and then it became a formal thing and they started advertising it. So obviously a huge boon for Instacart, but I'm calling it now and it'll probably affect their stock price. They will end that relationship with Instacart and they will use Amazon. I'd say probably, yeah, mid-future, next couple of years, if not earlier, if they can get out of it.
Yeah, I would tend to agree, man. Like, you know, Amazon's capabilities are just so extensive. It would make a lot of sense to go that way.
Well, and then they push out another competitor who has distribution, essentially. So,
yeah,
that's pretty much it for the podcast. Really appreciate your time and discussing stuff.
Absolutely, man. No, always a pleasure. So we'll chat again soon, I'm sure, and there'll be a lot more to talk about.
Yeah, I'll catch you in an SF in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
All right, catch you later. Bye.